Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 12:53 p.m. Eastern on March 13th in the year of our Lord, 2023. Great bonus episode on the Patreon for all those few, the proud, those with money to burn. It was a fun, morbid Patreon episode where I teased everybody about my special selling, and I really got everybody. And I just thought, why should I be the only one upset, depressed, and miserable about my failures? Why don't I include the Patreon community? So thank you to everybody who subscribes to that. I'm sure I lost 10 subscribers just for the cruelty. But the cruelty is the point. That's both Trump's policy and my reason for doing comedy. Cruelty is the point. Self-cruelty in my case. But I'm sitting here, I'm well past a green tea with matcha and walnuts, so you can hear it from my healthy, upbeat voice. I just had a Simple Mills almond flour bar, because I'm super healthy and I love buying six tiny snack bars for $7 at Whole Foods. I buy groceries for the job I want, not the job I have. That's always my philosophy. Look like you're successful, and then one day you'll be homeless. And I'm drinking water. Nature's soda. So I'm feeling good-ish. Not really. I just had a physical therapy session, which was grueling. They're all fucking grueling. But we're making progress on the shoulder. So sometime, here's the question. Will I do a push-up or have a special out first? And we have to rule out, obviously, person of height, which I've put together. The set is finalized. I say this all the time, but I already think person of height might be funnier than half blackface. Some of it is because it's newer. Some of it is because it feels a little more free and less burdened by all the problems of half blackface. But half blackface, while I would never do a one-man show, I would rather drown my comedy career in a bathtub than do a one-man show. It has some thematic elements, whereas person of height is going to just be sort of just a straight up hour of like funny bits, a little bit, you know, some broader themes. But it's, you know, half blackface is basically, here's my rise to fame and how it fell apart. And then here's my life as a half black person who looks white to a lot of people. So there's a lot of bits from my life, from the pandemic, from my childhood, but you can kind of put it into sort of two big theme, overarching themes for half blackface, which, by the way, I think we are in day 512 since the first taping and day 304, I think, since the second taping. So that continues to eat at me like a cancer, possibly giving me cancer. Like if you read studies, like if I all of a sudden go from a healthy person to like having some terminal illness in the next 6 months, like I might want my body autopsied like the way they do for football players with CTE. And I just want to like find if there's any link to half blackface and whatever kills me. And then I want the people who caused it to be sued into poverty and depression also. Because once I'm dead, I don't ask my followers and friends and fans to turn the other cheek. I'll do the cheek turning. Okay. Which sounds like you know, like a dominant gay man, what he would say. But no, I'm just kidding. Forgive everybody, half blackface. Just because it ruined my career in life doesn't mean that those people shouldn't go on to have successful, thriving careers in the entertainment business. While I die an entertainment death more brutal than anything. Anyway, guys, moving on. And by the way, in 11 days, it's the 3-year anniversary of the Trump Easter video, the video that changed my life largely for the worst. But, you know, I have a stack of cash in the bank that I'm not doing anything with. So thank you for that. But that'll be fun. Celebrating the 3-year anniversary. Sarah Cooper's on Broadway, has a memoir coming out. I've sold 15 tickets to my next special taping. So we're both thriving. That, speaking of which, guys, the Patreon people got the news first, but I have canceled the March 31st recording. Let's just give some inside baseball, because a hallmark of my comedy career is brutal honesty. Being funny and being brutally honest, and not combined. I don't need my comedy to be raw and honest and powerful. Fuck off. But in real life, when I tell you the truth about comedy, I try to be raw, honest, and powerful. And I had sold as of Friday? As of Friday, I had sold 5 tickets to the March 31st show. 5 tickets. In case you're wondering, that's not a lot. But not to be outdone, I had only sold 8 tickets at that point to the Saturday, April 1st show, April Fool's Day. And you can, obviously, I am the fool. But I said, okay, well, 8 is certainly more than 5, and it's a Saturday. So let's cancel the Friday show. So the Friday show was canceled. I posted on social media that I had canceled it. And the next day, before the website could take it down, before the Triad could take that to town, I sold 2 tickets to the Friday show. And I just thought, of course, nobody's bought tickets to that show in like 2 weeks. But of course, I sold 2 tickets. The day I canceled the show, 2 tickets get sold to that one. So the March 31st show is canceled. So we're back in, and this is, you know, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you just listen to that episode because I break down a lot of, you know, sort of where that ranks historically in my career. Hint, it's dead last. But, you know, you just sort of have to question your wisdom and your perseverance doing comedy when, you know, it's... I'm at a loss for words, and I'll move on because we want to talk about Oscars and movies and stuff like that. But it's, as you can imagine, and this is for everyone who told me over the last 3 years that something was my big break or this was it and I needed to stop being so negative and pessimistic. I sold more tickets to every single album taping at this point before the taping than this one. So I have data from a moderate size sample size because I've been so prolific that proves that my career in some respects has never been worse. So that's obviously odd and disheartening, but that's sort of, there's no way to like sugarcoat that. It's just, that's just a fact. Like I've never been this close to a show with this few tickets sold to a taping. So, that's just what it is. And we move on with it. And it would just really help, I think, my psyche. If I could be unburdened by half blackface, if I could have any news on that, good, bad, or indifferent. But needless to say, you know, by me signing off on it, we just entered a new world of the pitch phase, which who knows? Hey, Cookie. Is that 10 days? Is that 10 weeks? Is that a decade? We really don't know, and we're in no position based on this experience to say anything. You know, it's. I just hope anybody who has ever told me anything positive about my comedy career can just realize JL was right. And it's unfortunate, but JL knows what he's talking about. JL wants to succeed. JL works hard. So maybe when JL was being pessimistic about lip syncing becoming taking over, or about the industry ignoring him, or that he couldn't quit a day job because he had no faith in comedy, he was right the whole time. So I get my wish. I could be happy or I could be right, and it appears that comedy has allowed me to be right. So thank you for that, comedy. It's been a magical 20-year journey. Anyway, guys, the Friday show's canceled. And as a friend reminded me, I'm competing against the Final Four. And so what? If a comedian can't get 100 ticket sales to a special taping, especially after the last special taping was such an emotionally draining experience, and this special represents sort of a... This is like Taylor Swift recording her own song so she can have like economic freedom from her label. This is a smaller version of that, obviously, but this is very important. So if a comedian can't sell 100 tickets in his hometown, regardless of what's competing, then he should probably not be doing comedy. And that's okay. I'm a capitalist. I believe to a certain degree in the free market and the market speaking, and the market, the invisible hand of the market has bitch slapped me. And so that's it. So Adam Smith or whoever the fuck came up with the invisible hand of the market, I hear you. You are seen. And that's it. So that's an update on that. I obviously have shows in DC this Sunday, which has been a humongous hassle. They finally, on the ninth time, got the show lineup right. Me and Chris Lamberth. So that's DC, 7 p.m. at the DC Improv on Sunday the 19th. I don't know. Probably, possibly the last time I ever perform at that club. The club that first paid me in 2004 to MC for Gary Owen. It's a very special place. It's a great club. But, you know, I've dated great women that I broke up with or that didn't want to date me. It doesn't make them bad people. But it means that the relationship's over. And that's sort of what it feels like with the DC Improv. And maybe I'm wrong, but so if you're in DC and you're a fan, you know, do something else, because that's probably what you'll do. After that, Philadelphia. Not sure how ticket sales are for that, but if I'm just guessing, if past is prologue, they're bad, except for Mick DeFlo, who's fucking killing it. Like, all his people are going to be there, so... I'll probably have to just give him like half the money out of a guilty conscience. Saturday the 25th, I'm at the Princeton Catch a Rising Star. My money is fixed there, so I would just tell people, if you're choosing between Philly and Princeton, go to Philly. If you can't go to Philly and you can go to Princeton, go to Princeton. But my money, I get the same check regardless of how many people show up on the 25th. And then after that, I have my checkup with my shoulder doctor, the new one, the second opinion one, who will, you know, tell me that he's got a... amputate the arm, and then after that, it's just April 1st, April Fool's Day, one taping. I'm still in the position that I was in 2006 when I recorded my first album. One show, one take, make something really good, hope for the best, prepare and expect the worst. So there it is. That's your update on JL's comedy career. I am also a part of the Red Bank Comedy Festival on April 29th. So if that feels close to you or whatever, tickets, I think I put the ticket link on my website for the festival. And other than that, not much to report. It's, you know, half blackface continues to exist in purgatory. I keep having these like momentary lapses of optimism where I'm going, what if it does sell? And I have to, you know, I have to electric shock my testicles every time just to remind me that that's a bad thought. Those are not helpful thoughts to my overall well-being. But I can't help it, because I know I made something really good. So we can all hope. We can all, well, some of us can pray. All of us can hope. Some of us can pray. And, but I just hope, a person of height, like, obviously I want to sell tickets to DC and Philly, especially because the more tickets I sell, the more money I make. But that's obviously, in the grand scheme of things, irrelevant. Person of Height's going to be, I feel like I've done enough of these to know when I've got a great fucking hour, and I got a great fucking hour ready to roll. So be there if you can, and if you can't, if you're somebody who, you know, you listen to this podcast, that's a certain level of support. If you're a Patreon person, I appreciate that. If you've come to other shows or bought albums or whatever, all of it's appreciated. But, you know, if you want to see another great hour brand new of material, I hope to see you there. And if you can't make it, that's okay too. It'll be available probably, I don't know where it'll be available, up my ass probably. So you'll just have to tap your credit card on my asshole and I'll shit out a special. Now, why am I speaking like this? This isn't even depressing. This is just gross. No, it'll probably be just one of these fucking YouTube specials that, you know, hey guys, and I can feel embarrassed when my 66,000 subscribers don't watch it. So I don't know. I don't really want to make it for sale per se. Like, I might put it up on Patreon first or something, and then just make it available. I don't know at this point. Clearly, if you've been listening, you know that the business marketing side of comedy has perpetually been a weak point for me. I only perfected the writing and performing part of comedy, but obviously those are sort of tertiary importance in the business. How many TikTok followers, and do you have a fucking famous person you open for that you've become their LeFou to their Gaston, to make a Beauty and the Beast reference? Because boy, oh boy, I gotta say, I got a special place of hate in my heart for headliners who bring dog shit openers. Because man, being an opener for somebody is like, it's better than what I'm doing financially, because you're guaranteed work. You get probably tipped out. It's just being somebody's opener, you know, being somebody's bottom bitch is like better than being your own independent sex worker. Like, comedy's the one thing where having a pimp is better than having, like I'm an OnlyFans comedian. It's like, I do it all on my own. Okay. I'm just being a white trash chick from Florida, if that's right. I do it all on my own. Just watch my content. And if you like it, give me a tip and you can get exclusive VIP shit from if you pay extra. And you'd think like, wow, that's so great. And then it's like, it's a role reversal in comedy where the, you know, you'd think the woman with the pimp would be in danger all the time. But it's like, no, he treats me great. He gets me a hotel. He tips me more than the club pays me. And I'm working every weekend because he's popular. So I'm popular. So if I get 6 shows a week, 45 weeks a year, and I'm selling my merch and getting a hotel and tipped out, I'm doing much better career-wise, at least on the bottom line, than the OnlyFans comedian who's like, why ain't nobody subscribing to my OnlyFans? Why don't y'all support independent sex workers? So that's where I'm at. The worst OnlyFans comedian. So let's talk about movies, guys. That's enough of that dreary talk, shall we? Let's talk about something that really got me angry last night, and that's the Academy Awards. I disagreed with almost every category. Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like I said, it was my fifth. I had it, I believe, at number 5. Yes, I had it at number 5 in my ranking of the Best Picture nominees. It did not make my top 10 for the year, excluding anybody who's on Patreon. I think it was the episode Oxy Content, where I gave my top 10 movies of the year and gave a very stirring stirring praise of Tom Cruise and his role in movies and why I thought Top Gun should win Best Picture this year. It obviously didn't. It won Sound Awards. But Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think, cracked the formula. It really hit the algorithm. Like, our brains are almost wired like algorithms. And I'm not... There are plenty of people who genuinely loved the movie, thought it was great and creative. And it is. It's very creative. It's a fairly original. Although it was like my third or fourth multiverse movie I'd seen in the last like 2 years. And I was like, enough with the fucking multiverse. But the A24 crowd, it was like a cool action fun movie for the A24 crowd. So it was like when the nerd gets to be like in an a cappella group with the quarterback. And it's like, yeah, we're kind of buddies. Like, I feel like Everything Everywhere All at Once was like, this is a high-minded comic book type movie, so we can all agree, right, that we love this. It makes us cool, and it makes the comic book crowd seem a little more refined. Look at that. Great. And it's an Asian, it's a lot of Asian people, so you're getting, if you're a white in Hollywood, you get diversity credit without having to give full credit to black people for things. So you get like, and then there's conservatives who like to use that as like, I think, a bludgeon, like, oh, it's, and because that's a wedge they can divide between black people and everybody else is going, oh, so, and I've made sort of comments like this in the past because I felt like Oscar's so white and in a certain way didn't acknowledge like other advances, but at the same time, the black experience and discrimination against black people in this country is a unique form of discrimination, the same way Jewish people would be fully right to call anti-Semitism its own sort of unique, insidious form of discrimination with some of its own unique issues and experiences. But anti-black discrimination is a different, more overarching systemic form of discrimination that has lasted in this country than other forms of discrimination. Not that they don't exist. And of course, yes, there has been a lot of attacks on Asian people. And so it's not to diminish those things. But when you'll see certain conservative commentators, I think, and I hope I never went this far in sort of what I was saying, but you will they will use things like this as a bludgeon or to divide, sort of go, oh, so diversity isn't really what Black Lives Matter or black activists care about. They really care about black representation. So they don't really care if Guillermo del Toro wins for Pinocchio or if this brilliant, and they'll start like overpraising everything, this brilliant Asian-led film wins so many awards. And the representation of Indian people winning multiple awards. I guess that's not good enough. And that's the slick way of doing what America has always done, which is first discriminating against people, but then finding a way to accept them in slightly as a wedge against black people. The most infamous examples would be how like Italians and Irish, and even to some extent Jewish people were treated. But then if it became a battle between white and black, all of a sudden you sort of expand your ranks and the Irish need not apply signs disappear, etc. So I say that in anticipation of some sort of diversity argument. And yes, but on the flip side, there was an incredible amount of diverse representation and winning at the Oscars last night. I fucking hate it at all on the merits, not the color of the skin, but the mediocreness of your movies. Let's start with Best Picture. I would have accepted All Quiet on the... knowing that Top Gun was not going to win. Or Elvis. Knowing that two of my favorite three films of the year were not going to win. I would have gladly accepted All Quiet on the Western Front. And Banshees of Inisherin. But it became very painfully clear throughout the night that it was going to be Everything Everywhere All at Once as night. Shut up, Cookie. God, she's annoying sometimes. I love her, but she's annoying as shit. And, of course, it won. It won Best Picture. And the directors of Everything Everywhere All at Once are... it's like they were formulated in a lab to annoy anybody who is not a far left... they were formed in a lab, because they were just like spitting out every fucking thing you could say that would be like, yes, slay queen, whatever. And I'm not saying they were gay, I'm just saying it was like you expected a chorus of progressive white women to start screaming black catchphrases. They were so in tune with the algorithm. They were so annoying. And I'm sorry, there's ways of giving a speech. First of all, the editor, got to give a shout out to the editor of Everything Everywhere All at Once. White guy, like one of the directors. He always spoke first, by the way. Interesting that the white director for this Asian film always spoke first. Interesting. Very interesting. Making the Asian co-director subservient and go last. Interesting. But the editor, I looked at him and I said, I think this guy was an actor who turned to editing, because he was one of the best looking people on the stage all night. And he had a real calm, slick demeanor. I was like, did you really edit this film? Or are you up there like accepting an award for like a nerdy looking guy? But Everything Everywhere All at Once, Michelle Yeoh won. Congratulations. I think Danielle Deadweiler, was that her name? Well, her chances of winning are dead. She was not nominated for Till. I think that was the most glaring omission. As far as The Woman King, I thought it was a good movie. And certainly, if I were picking, it didn't make my top 10 for the year. But if I had to replace any of the movies that were nominated, I could have picked three or four. Fablemans. But then what are you going to do? Fablemans is Spielberg. And Spielberg, I get it. I believe every movie should be judged on its merits. But I fucking hated The Fablemans. But it's Steven Spielberg. It's like, he's in the GOAT conversation, and he's still making quality movies, but I just was fucking bored to tears by The Fablemans. But, like, Tar was nominated. And here's my beef, because Brendan Fraser, I also was like, I thought The Whale was mediocre. I don't think that shit should have gotten any nominations. And when it won for makeup, I thought, oh, does that mean they're not going to give him the award? But no, like, they put him in a fat suit, and then they gave him the award for wearing the fat suit and crying. I thought that movie was so mediocre, to be honest. I didn't think it was terrible. I was just like, this is like whatever. I would have given it to Colin Farrell or Austin Butler for Elvis. I watched Elvis again a few weeks ago. I fucking love that movie. I think that movie is so... And even though it has Tom Hanks' worst performance, hello, my boy, we have to do merchandising. He how good a movie and how good a performance are you when you are carrying Tom Hanks's worst performance and it's still an overall big success critically and commercially? And you had to drag Tom Hanks' worst performance of his career. He won the Razzie for it. So to me, Austin Butler or Colin Farrell should have won. Complete what? What? Oh, fuck. Did I just... Oh, no. Guys, I think I just got requested to redo a fucking cameo, which I fucking hate. Oh, God. Oh, did he ask me to do another one? Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Yes. This is why Cameo always cheers me. He says the last one was perfect. These are like business cameos, so I get paid 5 times as much. For like business usage, he was like, the last one was perfect. And he wants me to do another one for his marketing team. Yes, company. I'm not going to name the company, but yes, company. Damn. Hell yeah. Get that money, JL. See, but this is, again, proving my point. People... we're done with the gripe session. But yes, for a second I thought he wanted me to do it. It turns out it was better news. It was do another one, you fucking impressions monkey. So I would have been, okay, best actor, Austin Butler or Colin Farrell. Those were the choices. I have not seen Bill Nighy in Living, and I haven't seen Afterbirth or After Sun or After Earth with that Irish kid. So fuck both of them. But I thought Colin Farrell was great. And I thought Austin Butler was great. And I thought Brendan Fraser was hugely overrated. But the narrative was like, here's my thing with Brendan Fraser. Seems like a nice guy. He's a nice actor. He's a nice family guy, whatever. Good, good. Well-liked. He's been in some big movies. He used to be super good looking. Now he's like just a middle-aged guy past his prime. Great. Brendan Fraser doesn't rise, I'm sorry. He doesn't rise to the level of, it is Brendan Fraser's time. He delivers the performance of his career. Good, you got a nomination. Mickey Rourke in 2008. Former Hollywood heartthrob, up-and-coming guy, becomes a fucking weirdo. Crushes the shit out of The Wrestler. To me, should have won in a walk. Wins almost every award leading up to the Oscars, but then California had an anti-gay marriage bill pass, I think, or referendum. And immediately Sean Penn won. And I felt like Sean Penn, obviously an excellent actor. I was like, wait, he won? And I couldn't believe Mickey Rourke didn't win. Mickey Rourke had, I think, a more substantial career and gave a better performance to be worthy of the it's Mickey Rourke's time, or, oh, wow, he just showed up and delivered an incredible performance. Let's give it to him. So I just don't think Brendan Fraser was in any way, performance-wise or historical, due or the guy who should have won. But he did. As much as I hated Tar, Michelle Yeoh winning, I was just like, no, not even close. As far as I'm concerned, not even close. And I know everybody loves all at once. But Cate Blanchett is quickly headed to that Meryl Streep territory where she's just going to be the one who's like, well, every time she fucking opens her mouth, it's an award-worthy performance. So we'll nominate her. She's now I think 1 for 8. And Meryl Streep is 4 for 20 or some shit. It's ridiculous. If you're nominated 20 times for an Oscar, you should have 7 wins. Because it's just sort of an acknowledgement of your overall dominance. But I thought she should have won. In a walk. And instead, Michelle Yeoh won in a walk. Yes, that was racist. I will edit that in post. No, I won't. I do no editing. That was just, I couldn't avoid the pun. I'm sorry. That was very Jeremy Lin racist pun. It wasn't actually that racist. It wasn't as Jeremy Lin racist when they used a racial slur in a title to describe him having a bad game. A blank in the armor. I think walk is not really, that was just more playful pun, I think. Well, anyway, you can't cancel me when nobody comes to my shows. So that, look at that. I'm the other kind of cancel proof. Dave Chappelle is cancel proof because they try to you can try to cancel me, but guess what? I have too many bros
homophobes, and otherwise aggressive people who want to support me. Whereas JL is also cancel-proof because when you sell 8 tickets, what the fuck are you going to do? Take away his 8 tickets? Congratulations. Either way, he wasn't having a show. He canceled himself.
So me and Dave Chappelle are both cancel-proof for completely different reasons. But Jamie Lee Curtis won. And everybody thought Angela Bassett should have won. And to me, it was like Angela Bassett was the first actor from a Marvel movie to be nominated for an Oscar. And I was like, yes, that's good enough. Like, she was the first, like, but I don't, but she, I think she easily could have won because it was a good performance. It was a regal performance. It was very Oscar-y. And, you know, hey, if you're going to give an Oscar to a Marvel actor, it might as well be one of the more accomplished veteran actors that's in the cast. But they went with Jamie Lee Curtis. And I did laugh at Jamie Lee Curtis. I think it was a very fun performance she gave and a fun role she had. Like, I remember liking her in the movie. And just for the record, I liked Everywhere, Everything, All the Time, In All Places, once in a while. I liked it. And said that to the girl. I said, oh, it was good. My literal review when I got home after seeing it was like, oh, no, I liked it. I enjoyed the movie. I don't know why everybody's calling it like the best movie of the year, but I liked it. And then all of a sudden, the momentum just kept up and it became, you know, it's the Schitt's Creek of cinema, as far as I'm concerned, where it's like, so a near sweep of 7 awards by Everything Everywhere All at Once. So we're just calling it like an elite all-time great movie. Just like when Schitt's Creek, a mildly entertaining, often unfunny, but often on purpose. It was more like just a sweet, generally pleasant show most of the time that kind of ran on the same one or two comedic notes for 5 or 6 seasons. When that became the first comedy in Emmy history to sweep all categories, and people want to act like that's not fucking ridiculous. Okay, so and the same people that are like, oh my God, Schitt's Creek was amazing. They're the same people who like a year later was like, I think Ted Lasso might be the greatest comedy ever. I mean, it might be the best ever. And it's like, okay, so you're a fucking idiot. Like, you have full on recency bias dominating your brain. All in the Family, Seinfeld, Arrested Development, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Any fucking Norman Lear show, fucking Eastbound and Down. I know that'll never get considered, but Jesus Christ, incredible. Cheers, Cosby Show, In Living Color. Not that, like whatever you want to throw out, whatever comedies, you're just, boom. Schitt's Creek, Fleabag, Ted Lasso. So anything that's won an Emmy in the last 6 years is the greatest comedy of all time. Okay, gotcha. That's what it felt like with Everything Everywhere All at Once, where I'm like, you have great movies that are splitting Oscar ballots, but they just got together and were like, but Everything Everywhere at Once is just such an undeniable fucking masterpiece that we've never seen before. I mean, it's the fourth multiverse film in the last 2 years, but we can't honor Marvel. We can't Marvel, you know, and I say this as a guy who, you know, sometimes shits on Marvel, sometimes praises it, but you know what? If A24 had produced Avengers Endgame, it would have won 932 Oscars. But it was produced by a big studio and a lot of people saw it, so fuck it. This was in the sweet spot. It found just the cultural, financial, artistic sweet spot where it kind of got a piece of everything. It got the indie cred. It got the comic book vibe. It got the diversity cred. So it got like all this different sort of perfect gumbo of like, oh, this is like going to get love from all sorts of different corners for all sorts of legitimate reasons. But I'm sorry. Like, I just think All Quiet on the Western Front is just like, clearly, I mean, just should have won. If it wasn't going to go to my boy Tom Cruise, it should have won. Who the fuck is that? Tom Cruise? No. It is not. It's a spam call from Sussex County. Cough. Anyway, guys. I didn't... To me, it was like All Quiet on the Western Front, Cate Blanchett, Angela Bassett. I'm not as mad at that, but I just assumed she was going to win and thought that would be a fine choice. But I would redo, I think, most of the winners. Everything Everywhere All at Once getting screenplay, I think, is a good choice. But here's what pisses me off about that. Not that it won, because I think that's a good... That is an award that it probably deserved, because it was a very complicated to write. You know what I mean? Now, that, of course, means we have to see those directors again who wrote and direct. I think they wrote it. They were just atrociously annoying. I said on Facebook, I didn't want to get the Twitter smoke from all the heroes, but I said on Facebook that those two directors remind me of my shoulder surgery. Painful, annoying, and even worse because there have been two of them. But they wrote it's a very inventive, complicated script with a lot of entertainment value. So absolutely. But what annoys me about that is that I made that same argument for why Inception by Christopher Nolan should have won Best Original Screenplay. Because Oscars always jerk off for dialogue. They're always about dialogue. Like, I also think an inventive original concept is part of the screenplay too. It's not just what the characters say. The overall story is a main function of the screenplay. And I thought, sure, Inception doesn't have all the catchy, snappy Aaron Sorkin dialogue, but what an inventive, incredible story and script. And they gave it to King's Speech, because King's Speech had the witty repartee that the Oscar voters jerk off for. But this year, you know, now that I was against Everything Everywhere All at Once, but not in this category, really. I think it was a perfectly reasonable win in this category. But now they have awarded kind of like a dialogue story hybrid versus just going for the one, you know, because Martin McDonagh is the playwright. So I thought he was going to win because his movie is kind of it's the dialogue driven story. But they didn't. Probably because they gave him the win for Three Billboards a few years ago, which I did really enjoy that movie. So I think the one win that I'm like all on board with Everything Everywhere All at Once winning is original screenplay. So just to show you it's not all dollars and cents, that I'm not a hard-hearted man. She was the greatest piece of ass I've ever had, and I've had them all over the world. Now you get the hell out of here. What movie, guys? What movie? The Godfather. Correct. So I would have given it that, the screenplay. That's kind of the one award that I'm like, no beef, no problem with that. I felt... To me, it's like director has become a category that I'm like, what the fuck are they doing with director? And one of the first times I raised a question about director was after I saw the final Daniel Craig James Bond movie. I think it was No Time to Die, which I loved. And it was directed by, I think, Cary Fukushima, if I'm saying that right and not being racist. He had done Beasts of No Nation on Netflix, and then he won, I believe, an Emmy for his work directing all of season one of True Detective, which included, I think, the Emmy-winning episode 4 with, like, that intense 8-minute running shot with the McConaughey or whatever going through, like, the fucking white trash meth town or whatever. And, I just had a thought of Alexandra Daddario also in season one of True Detective. Should have won an Emmy for that. If you know, you know. And... Oh, by the way, I need to apologize. I was speaking very highly of The Witches of Mayfair, or Mayfair Witches, on AMC. And boy, it came out of the gate so strong with 3 great episodes to kick off the season. And then I was just progressively disappointed episode by episode as it went on. Like, I lost... I finished the season, but I don't know if I'll watch season 2. It was just... It started so great. And 3 episodes is a good trial period to, like, see. And I was like, oh, okay, we're 3 for 3 with 3 strong episodes. And then, like, it just fell off. So if you started that on my recommendation, it's up to you. But I would say maybe bail. But like, after watching that final James Bond movie, which got good reviews, and I was like, or you could talk about Avengers Endgame. Or you'll talk about Avatar and Top Gun this year, where you go, why is it directors only get credit for like these, like, either a war movie, which, by the way, All Quiet on the Western Front won all the technical awards that it was nominated, almost all the technical awards it was nominated for, no Best Director nomination. Also strikes me as odd, because war movies are kind of the one film, the one big movie genre that the Academy Awards kind of respect directors. Spielberg won his 2nd Oscar for Saving Private Ryan. But it seems like they went, like, smaller, almost like where I'm like, I'm not saying a director can't bring out great performances and have a vital role, even if it's not a small, but they seem to be like biased against big movies, which are sort of in some respects more impressive, heavy lifts. So I remember watching the James Bond movie going like, why? He's already like a critically acclaimed director. Why can't he get a Best Director nomination for like his work and the clear major project that he pulled off? And this year it was like all the small films. And when I saw that All Quiet on the Western Front wasn't even nominated for Best Director, like as they read off the list, I said, oh, well, it's okay. It's Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to win this one because, and not that it's not an impressive movie in terms of its technical and scope and its storytelling, but you know, I was just kind of like, okay, so it's on, it's nothing else has a shot now. So that's what happened. But I think the director category is always skewed towards like smaller movies, like, oh, the subtle tone of the lighting and the performance he got out of Smorgasfinsvan in this amazing Dutch film about a bread maker who finds out that he has rickets and shingles. And it's a very powerfully moving small film, but the direction, his fingerprints are all over this film. I fell asleep 9 times during it, but that was just because the tone the director had set was so powerful and rich. Whereas then I was forced to watch this movie, Top Gun Maverick, which featured nice performances and incredible aerial work and very difficult things to film. And I stayed up the whole time, so it didn't give me naps to reflect on the power of the film I was seeing. I was hugely invested and interested in what was going on. And that really detracted from me focusing on the director's style. I just sort of enjoyed the film and its scope and power. And never had that 10-minute phase when I had finished my popcorn where I just dozed off and had a daydream about how brilliant and interesting the director's choices were. So I can't support Top Gun Maverick getting a director nomination or any consideration in any categories other than sound. That is pretentious film critic character, brought to you by J.L. Covan. So, oh, and next month, by the way, for all you Patreon people considering, Ron Reagan is stepping in to do book reviews because the two books I'm reading for April's show are The Godfather. I was inspired by the show The Deal on Paramount Plus, and God Is Not Great by Christopher Hitchens. So I will be reviewing those two books with God in the title as avowed atheist Ron Reagan, not afraid of doing Patreon book reviews. So that's a little treat for all of you. Maybe that'll entice one or two of you to join up. Still trying to figure out when I can do the Ron tent, the Ron DeSantis content, but I do have his book. Yes, I bought the book as a prop. Sorry. Sometimes you gotta, my one purchase to roast him and mock him is worth it, I think. But I'm trying to think what else happened in the Oscars. You know, some of the speeches were really nice. The guy from Everything Everywhere All at Once won Best Supporting Actor, which I think his odds were like -5,000 on a website. So meaning he was a shoo-in, and he gave a very nice speech. And I just want to say, he said, you know, it took me a long time. I had sort of retreated and quit on my dream, but I came back thanks to somebody who gave me an opportunity. So don't quit on your dream. And I just want to counter that and say, most of you should probably quit on your dreams. That's what I'll say. I think I'm a better comedian than Short Round is at acting. Yeah, I said it. I fucking said it. And I'm going to quit. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to set a more realistic, worthy example. It's easy to tell everybody to follow your dreams once your dreams have been accomplished. But it's much harder to tell people to quit their dream. But sometimes that's what you need to hear. And I'm here to tell all you young comics or you people striving to do something other than work a shitty day job and try to take care of your families or yourselves the best you can, just do that. Just do that. And try to find the joy and peace and love in that. Don't follow your dreams. Because you know what dreams are? They're shit that happens while you're sleeping. That's right. And as George Carlin said, you know why they call it the American Dream? Because you gotta be asleep to believe it. You gotta be asleep to believe it. It's a fucking joke. Okay, that started to turn into Italian George Carlin. So I also want to talk one other thing. One other movie-themed story. I watched Babylon on Paramount Plus. It's on Paramount Plus right now. It tanked with the critics. It fucking tanked horrifically at the box office, and it did poorly. It got roasted a little bit by Jimmy Kimmel, and I don't think it won any awards. It was nominated for costume and production and score. I gotta say, we watched it. We gave it a chance. Now, here's why I think Damien Chazelle, if anybody has paid attention, you got to know that this is a guy I'm a big fan of. He wrote Whiplash, which is a phenomenal. I love the movie Whiplash. It was my number two movie that year. I just remember that it was my number two movie the year it came out. Then he did La La Land, which I think made my top 10. I might have had it like seventh movie of the year, and he won Best Director of that. I think he was the youngest. He might have been the youngest director to ever win Best Director. And then he made First Man, a space movie about Neil Armstrong, which was my number one movie of that year. So he's had three movies up to this point make my top 10, including a number one movie. Now, First Man got technical nominations, but did not get a Best Picture nomination. I saw it in the IMAX. I was blown away. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was fucking amazing. And what they did with the IMAX in terms of the moon landing was incredible, I thought. But I thought it was like technically good I've been in a real like love of space shit for the last like 5 or 6 years, and man, I loved First Man. I thought it was just a great movie. But basically, if you're Damien Chazelle, you're kind of like, I'm fucking 33. I've made three excellent critically acclaimed movies. I've been nominated for multiple Oscars, and I'm the youngest Best Director winner, or one of the youngest Best Director winners ever. So my next movie, I'm going to go more ambitious. And I think he wanted this movie, Babylon, to be his, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one where, like, you know, he put it all together and it won Best Picture and Director and Writer and Actress. And, like, and I think he bit off, it's not that he bit off more than he'd chew. I think he Oscar baited a little too much. And what I mean by that is, the first 30 minutes, and I said to The Righteous Girlfriend as the film started, I was getting this vibe. I go, this is going to be one of those movies where they don't even give you the title until like 40 minutes in, because it's like, whoa, what did I, like, they want people to be like, whoa, what did I just see? This was intense. Wow. This guy has taken me into a whole nother fucking world. Babylon. And I was right. Like 31 minutes in, the title appears after this like 30 minute raunchy, excessive, excrement, breast-filled party scene, just to basically be like, the roaring 20s were fucking disgusting and filthy as any sort of like adult video awards party you might see. It was like just crazy, and people are pieces of shit and racist, and everybody's groping and fucking and doing drugs, and it's disgusting. And you're like, oh, the roaring 20s were truly fucking vile and disgusting.
Sex positive and liberated to some of you, not afraid of raunchy parties sending me to hell.
So thank you, Ron Reagan. And then looking forward to your reviews, by the way, on Patreon next month. So that happens, and I look at Righteous Girlfriend, I'm like, and she said it about the guy, what's his name, Ansel Elgort or whatever, the guy from Baby Driver who's in Tokyo Vice on HBO Max. What she said about that series when we watched it, and I thought it was hilarious and correct, she said, I think this actor is really feeling himself in this role. And if you're feeling yourself, we shouldn't know that. And she said about Damien Chazelle with this movie, I think he's feeling himself. Now, once the party is over, once we get past that first like 31 minutes, we hit like a 2-hour and 20-minute run of kind of an excellent movie. Like, the trailer for this movie, which I mocked on a previous episode, was atrocious. Like, the only thing keeping me enticed was Damien Chazelle's name. The trailer was annoying. It was stupid. Let me tell you something. Brad Pitt's really good in the movie. Margot Robbie is excellent. I think the two most disappointed people in this movie
involved with this movie were definitely Damien Chazelle and Margot Robbie, because if this movie had been, first of all, promoted differently with a better trailer, because there's a new trailer on Paramount Plus that's completely different. It's a real 2.5 minute trailer that would have gotten me much more interested in the movie. If you trim that half hour party scene into like 13 minutes, so you get the vibe, but it's not this kind of like, it's like Damien Chazelle was like almost consciously making a scene that he's like, this is what people are going to talk about, this scene. They're going to say, I mean, have you ever seen anything like that 30-minute party scene to open up Babylon? I mean, it just hits you in the face with a kaleidoscope of emotions and gut reactions and just intensity that you were like, what am I getting myself into? And the answer is an Oscar-worthy whirlwind. That's what I think he was thinking in his head. And he's right to have confidence and a little arrogance and ego in his work with his early accomplishments as obviously a very gifted young filmmaker. But you can't be like conscious, so consciously aware that you're trying to make the thing that you want to make. Like, just make a good opening and let it happen. But it was too long. It was too excessive. It was almost got to a point of irritation. But the middle 220 of this movie, it's a 3-hour and 5-minute movie. The middle 220, 225 is pretty much excellent. And Margot Robbie is really fucking good. And Brad Pitt is good. And everybody is kind of really good in the movie. And I was like, it has a pace that I'm just like, yeah. Like, I'm in. Like, it doesn't feel long. It's keeping this hectic pace, but it works for the bulk of the movie. And then the final 10 minutes of the movie is such a we love cinema jerk off. Like, he knows that Oscars love movies about movies. But he, in the words of Robert Downey Jr., and pardon me for using the R word,
he went full retard. He can't go full retard.
That is the Tropic Thunder comment about why Sean Penn didn't win the Oscar for I Am Sam. He went full masturbation. He didn't just do a tribute to Hollywood or like, God, what a beautiful movie about the golden age of cinema or the underbelly of like the not so golden age of cinema. He went full, I'm going to give you a montage of like 20 different fucking classic movies. I'm going to make you just love movies. And it was like, why did you do that? Like, you hammered home the point so excessively that it was blatant what you were doing. You were trying to get the Oscar for the we made a movie about movies. And I can understand why you feel, and it must have been devastating, I think, to make for this movie to financially and critically bomb, because within the 3 hours is an excellent 2.5 hour movie. And I mean that. And like, overall, I keep thinking about the movie and I enjoyed it. Like, the half hour and the 10 minutes bookending the movie were not bad enough to destroy my overall enjoyment of the movie. They were just enough to make you roll your eyes and be like, okay. But that middle 2.5, so I would recommend it. I'm surprised. I like made fun of the movie with the preview. Who wants to see me fight a snake? Hell yeah. And it was like, bam, 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 and it was too much. By the way, the score is fucking great. Righteous Girlfriend preferred the score from All Quiet on the Western Front, which did win, that kind of menacing, marching score. But man, I fucking hate jazz music, but boy, did I love the score for Babylon. So overall, if you have Paramount Plus, I think it's worth your time. And I didn't expect that. I was kind of watching it perfunctorily, going like, well, and as soon as it really is a piece of shit, I'm turning it off. And I actually gave a look over about 20 minutes in during that party scene. I was like, okay, this is, I mean, what are we doing here? But within that is a very, very strong movie. So I recommend it. And other than that, I think that's it. So we've bitched about comedy. We've broken down the Oscars. We've said some questionably racial things. We've recommended Babylon. We've done 2 Ron Reagan Jr.'s. And I think that's it. So hopefully I haven't gotten a work assignment, but I got another fucking cameo. Got to get that cameo money. Get paid, blow up like the World Trade. And I'm trying to think if I have anything else to tell you guys. I always like forget something and go, well, that would have been funny if I had mentioned that. But I think that's it. That's all we have to talk about. My comedy, the Oscars, Megan, the Oscars, and Babylon. So take that recommendation for whatever you think it's worth. But thank you for listening. Hope to see you guys at some of these shows, please. There's no better time than exactly right now to get tickets to my shows, wherever the one near you is. Obviously, we'd love to start selling a lot more tickets to that April 1st taping of Person of Height. And if we don't, we don't. You know, I'm just trying to accept the fate that I've been dealt, but it's going to be good. So if you're a fan, get your tickets. And if you're not a fan, I'm sorry that you thought you were listening to someone else's podcast, but thanks for the algorithm boost. Bye, guys. See you next Tuesday.